Antwoord.
Yeah.
Sabrina George interviewing John Antwoord, part three, still on the Inner Cafe on King's Road. So you had no, your directing experience came from vaguely paying attention to other people, otherwise you made it up as you went along.
No directing experience.
Right, so you just made it up.
Like I'd had no writing experience. You don't need experience. You know, I had no experience of walking before I walked. You know, I was a baby. My only experience, I was a very expert crawler and dribbler. And I hope I don't return to those expert habits. But I had no experience of walking, yet I did it. So, you know, I've got a very good opinion of myself.
It's fantastic. It's so refreshing. So when with the success of that, did you then go back to St Ives and say, I'm going to...
I was married, I bought a place in St Ives. I had a flat in Pimlico and a Jaguar car and, you know, three lovely kids. And I was drinking. And so at that time, around that time, I'd worked with Gorton Simpson on the major screenplay of The Wrong Arm of the Law with Peter Sellers. And that was a lovely hit. It's a lovely piece of work. So I was set. Nobody could tell me anything about. Certainly couldn't tell me not to drink. I mean, you know, I'm the guy who's winning everything. So don't tell me. But I'd just peaked, and it was a rapid descent from 63 to 69 to a collapse of alcoholism and. 68, end of 68 when I got sober.
So alcoholism presumably manifested that you just couldn't write.
I could write.
Right.
That's strange because you have to bear in mind that some wonderful writers are alcoholics and active alcoholics. They're not all people who've stopped and recovered. So actually, towards the end of my drinking, I wrote Trixie and Baba and Captain Oates Left Sock, and when I did the last draft of Trixie and Baba, I wrote that 1 week, and the next week I wrote Captain Oates Left Sock about group therapy in a mental home, and I've just been chucked out of a mental home. I didn't discharge myself, I've been chucked out for drinking, and so I was desperately sick, and yet Trixie and Baba was picked up by the Royal Court. So I remember it was on my wedding anniversary, and when you drink is in to that degree is in a household, of course it disrupts this beautiful family life. It's awful, all the comings and goings. So you don't have to go into it more than that. But on our wedding anniversary, two things happened. It's an amazing coincidence. The Royal Court phoned and said, we're going to do Trixie and Baba. So that was my heart's desire, my dream come true. And on the same day, we got a call from my agent saying, Dick Lester, Richard Lester, is going to do The Bed Sitting Room as a film. And Spike's not available, so will you do, to co-write with you anyway, will you do the screenplay? So I said yes. And the great thing about those two events and what came to pass was I thought, because I'd become pretty well unemployable, I'm back. I'm really there. And I remember when I was in the Royal Court at the first day of rehearsal of Trixie and Baba, I couldn't look the actors in the eyes. I couldn't look at them. I went in the toilet and I was crying. And I thought, what the fuck's wrong with you, John?
This is where you always wanted to be.
Yeah, this is where, and you can't, and there's something wrong. And when I was doing the screenplay of, which I did a, you know, lovely job, it's a really nice piece of work, but I couldn't stay, I couldn't, and I was trying not to drink, and I remember Dick Lester said to me, it's not how much you drink, it's that you're obsessed with it. You're obsessed with, because I was trying to control it, but you can't when you're like that. And so all that collapsed and I got sober.
And were you still doing comedy when you were that?
Well, I could come and go. I'd occasionally get rewrite jobs on a Carry On film. on the Bernard Braden show. I could still do
that. At that time, were you doing it more as a craft, or were you actually seeing the funny side of anything at that point?
I wouldn't say it got more mannered, but I wrote a play called You'll Come to Love Your Sperm Test, following the, and some people love it. It was a play that was debated in the House of Lords as to whether I and the publisher, John Calder, should be prosecuted for blasphemy. So, you know, and this was in my descent into really the depths of alcoholism. And again, so this was like the heroics for me. This is the heroics of being an alcoholic writer, you know, the controversy that goes with the territory, and other incidents, which I won't go into now, but they were all sort of supportive of my wonderful role as this alcoholic rebel without a cause, angry young man getting older all the time and sicker, and the doctors actually were saying to my wife, he won't last another 6 months if he goes on like that. And so I, as you can tell, 40 years later, here I am. So I got sober.
And were that towards the end, were you hanging out with other notorious alcoholics?
Yeah, Geoffrey Bernard, but not right. Towards. I had some good times with Geoffrey in Soho, in the French pub.
He's a famous journalist,
Geoffrey,
alcoholic.
Yeah.
Geoffrey, I mean, he wrote Bernard about his alcoholism in his journalism, which is what I mean by
yeah.
It was crucial to the topics of what he wrote about.
Yeah. So, and I used to see him in the French's pub, and I thought, this guy must be an alcoholic, because every time I come in here, he's drinking. But I had to go in there and drink to see him. I never thought that. I always thought I was, until it was put to me, that I was an alcoholic. The penny didn't drop. And I wasn't taking drugs. I thought, I'm Mr. Straight. But anyway, I got sober.
So you got sober, and then what happened to your writing? Did the writing get terribly serious, or did it say funny, or how did that impact on how you were operating as a writer?
Well, it got, I wrote
another. That's a big myth that you have to, that geniuses, when they give up drinking, that.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe for a little while. Maybe. I was all right, but I mean, I was so totally committed to recovery that had to come. But there was nothing else. There wasn't a romantic insanity. I'd done that. It was, you know, the last knockings. So I had to come to terms with, and I enjoyed being sober, and I became a religious sort of fanatic. Went through all sorts of stages that tried my wife to the point of divorce, bless her heart. But I didn't pick up a drink, and I haven't picked up a drink in the 40 years since 1968. And I wrote a play called Loonies, which was picked up, which I wrote. I saw The Desperate Hours on television, and I'm mucking around in the kitchen, and I went upstairs and I wrote it in a day, and Michael Rudman was sent it by my agent, Blanche Marvin, at the time. And so we did that at the Traverse Theatre, and then at the Hampstead Theatre Club with Colin Welland and the guy who's left his clothes on the beach.
Not Stephen Fry.
No.
Which one? There's a few.
Yes, this guy. No, it's so good. My memory has been fantastic throughout. I've been conjuring up all sorts of names.
Peregrine, the Rise and Fall of.
Yes, the Rise and Fall of.
What's his name?
I know.
Brilliant actor.
I know, folks. I know exactly who he is. And you don't get any, and you will not get a reward for telling me. And you won't say he's got Alzheimer's, because I can tell you.
The star of Rising Damp and of.
Yes, I know. Leonard Rossiter.
God for that.
Thank God for that, of course. Now, that scare's over. All right. So with Leonard Rossiter.
Colin Wayland, yeah.
Yeah, so that. And the lovely Jane Wymark.
And how did your writing, do you think, change when you got more and more sober? Did it change much? Not really. You were just there for it.
I went through a stage when I was studying writing, but I don't think that helped. I would study... what was it called?
How to Write a Play?
No, I would study other writers' work. At separate tables, Terence Rattigan and the Flair Park. I would make a study of that to see, you know, but it didn't help. Because studying's never really... What does help in study for me is, I mean, I can go to the theatre, I love to go to the theatre now, and I can read work, but to actually take it to bits to say how does this work is total nonsense. So I've stopped that, but I mean, I love reading history now. I love reading war history, and as a consequence of reading war history, I wrote Crete and Sergeant Pepper, which was the next play that was done on the main house at the Royal Court in 1973, I think it was. And that was a play that I wrote in 3 days. I sent it to the Royal Court on a Friday, and on the Monday they're on the phone. Yeah, do it. So sobriety works on that
way. So, I mean, when you talk like this, it's all a bit shocking that you're chucking out a play in 3 days. Is that like a few years gestation?
It was some gestation, because I thought of it as a film. But when you think of Loonies, for instance, I've been revising this play from the 70s, and I just did a read-through with a cast who were doing Captain Oates Left Sock in January at the Fimbra Theatre, and I asked them to do a reading, because I've been revising so much over the years with various productions of Loonies, various different changing productions, one on the radio with Robert Stevens, who was brilliant, and myself. I was adequate, I would say that, so I can assess performance sometimes. So some things, I think, why do I keep revising? Why do I keep changing? Another play called Lack of Moral Fibre, which has not been done in the theatre, but I've written it as a theatre piece, but was done on the radio with Richard Briers and another name I'll give you in a minute. Lovely guy.
Give us some clues.
Mildred and George.
Oh, yes. I can't remember his name.
Yes, I do know.
Brian?
Yeah.
Murphy.
Brian Murphy, well done.
Brian Murphy.
You get the golden penny. Totally know that. That was good. Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, and Captain Oates Left Sock was done on the radio.
Why aren't you churning out a play once a week, if you can?
Because when you do it, and when, for instance, I wrote The Missing Links in 64, and that was written in 2 days, and was again sent over the weekend and picked up and done, and now it's, I hope to get a major revival of it on television with the BBC. That's possible. When I do that, I think, God, you can just knock off one of these when you like, you know. But it sometimes happens, and sometimes a play is just as good. The Loonies now, as it's called, not The Loonies, Loonies, is a comedy thriller, but it's layered, and I've worked on it and changed the emphasis of the characterisations. So it's just whatever it takes.
Like you should wait until the whole thing comes together and then you just write it straight off, or do you sort of sit down with a piece of paper?
Well,
I mean, most people sit down with a piece of paper and go, I want to write a play about X, and then they seem to take 2 years till they finish it.
Yeah, well, what I pray for, as I do pray these days, is I say, God, help me to know when to start something, that I get the pitch right, so that I get it right, because I write very quickly, and I just want to pitch it right, and there's a historical subject, sort of roughly Second World War, and I'm saying, am I procrastinating because I'm reading so much history, I want to know more about these characters, or is it a matter of patience, because I think every day, what am I doing with my life, you know, am I just being a wanker, just getting on with it, and I get lovely start points, and I'd also I like to write books. I say I like to write books, but I've written one book that's been published, and I've written a book that was refused for publication, and I've written part one of a book about the First World War, which I will pick up again. And so I see that means, and I always think, John, you can knock it off. But it takes, it's just knowing when, how, and I believe in abundance, and I believe that if I just let go, the talent just works for itself. And in a way, so all my thing of saying, which I may have overdone in this interview about being brilliant, I now regard as it's not me really. It's a beautiful gift, and I just pray that I just use it well. Because I enjoy life so much, and I want to be successful. Because it's like if you're a chef and you're preparing a meal, it's not much fun if people aren't enjoying it. You know, I love to go to the theatre, and people are full of laughter. It's such a joy to me. And when I did Steptoe and Son with Ray Gorton, who I, in my sobriety, Ray and I have done several things together, and to have the laughter, I've had lots of laughter writing with Ray. It's been a great pleasure. And most recently Steptoe, so that's brilliant. And before that we did a play called When Did You Last See Your Trousers, and you know, just great. Just
so do you sit down in the morning and do you plan an 8-hour day, or do you just like keep absorbing until you're ready to just...
I get up and I say, I write in my diary, and often it's a sort of diary notebook, and I get what I really believe is sort of message from my spirit, which is, John, calm, relax, calm, don't be scared, you're doing all right, don't be frightened, don't fret, pet, come on darling, it's okay, you're doing all right, you're going to have a good day, calm down, you know, I've no idea what I'm going to do, and that's why I'm here, that's why I'm available this afternoon for this interview.
I'm terrible at writing comedy. When I'm in a structured thing, it's always when I'm... Isn't it often when I'm bicycling around Waterloo roundabout with seven buses, I have the most genius idea. And by the time I've got to the bridge, I've forgotten. You know, and just going to go, And it's just so random. You get this sort of brilliant stuff, and then you're suddenly like... And when you're supposed to sit there quietly, nicely, in front of your computer going... I can't think of a single thing that's even vaguely worth thinking about as comedy. It's always somewhere really daft that's impossible.
Yeah, well, that's a common experience. So, you know, to go to start in the desert with nothing is just right. Because when you get deadlines, you can do it. You've got to do it, and that just works because you've got.
Well, I like putting myself in just constantly doing things in life. Maybe if I don't like going to a yoga class, which got me so much material, it was so awful. You know, just random things of making myself just do it because I should. Going to the dentist, the doctor, whatever, and then sometimes I find that I bump into somebody or something that sparks it off. And it's almost like I need to be out in life all the time to start getting the funny ideas. If I'm sitting on my own in the computer, I'm sitting there going, this isn't funny. And it never will be. I don't like it at all. So I was just wondering whether you just spend a lot of time absorbing until you're ready to put it out there.
Well, I don't know when I'm ready. I just pray and hope I get it. I trust I get it right, and I trust I'm so excited about writing.
And you still are?
Oh, are you kidding? More than ever. And a year ago, for somebody who loves theatre, I wasn't going very often, but a year ago I started going to theatre lots, and it's brilliant. And I went to see War Horse, which is a beautiful play, and I wouldn't go and see it for a year because the subject that I'm writing is about horses in war, First World War, and I was so disappointed. But I wish the the author and the play well. It's a, I love the production. Took my son to see it. Always take your children to see it. Of course, he's 40 something, but you know, he appreciated. He appreciated the gesture. He came a bit late, yeah, but he appreciated it. So and I had the courage to go and see it, and it just reassures me that my work is my work, and that work is that work. So that was one thing. But I've booked just the National now. I've been going to the National a lot, and I'm going to see England People Very Nice. That's was it today or yesterday? I booked to see Burned by the Sun, about the Stalinism, and I'm fascinated by that era. I'm fascinated by these monsters in history, and the social, the fabric, the way the country works. I understand more about Chekhov, having read The Shadow of the Red Palace by Edward Crankshaw, and I can never say this guy's name. Seebeck, somebody or other. Wonderful writer.
Montefiore.
God bless you for your wonderful writing. Because I read The Red Court of Stalin, whatever, and I thought, I thought that was wonderful. Then, of course, he's written a book called Young Stalin. I thought, I can't read this because it won't be anything like as good. But eventually I bought it. And it's a fantastic book. It's great. The scholarship of these guys is amazing. You know, I just love it. It's very inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's brilliant, John.
Okay.
You're a star. Thank you very much for that.